They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, and welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies with your hosts, Nathan and Elliot Magellan, and a random straw poll I conducted on the streets of Kansas City, asking participants whether they had a more positive or more negative view of Magellan's at the Movies. The most popular answers were, leave me alone, and that's it, hand over all your money, which I think there's some positives to take away from that.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm glad. Did you use the entirety of our extra long break to come up with this hilarious opening joke, Elliot?
I've had that one in the chamber for a long time. But you know what else is in the chamber right now? Consolidation. Nathan, I don't know if you've heard about this, but Warner Brothers, the rumor is that Warner Brothers is up for sale. Or maybe not necessarily up for sale, but they've been entertaining offers with supposedly Paramount being their primary suitor. I think that we've made our opinion of Warner Brothers leadership pretty clear on this program, but I have to say, I really doubt that the answer to all of our problems is more stuff under one roof. Especially Paramount. I don't hate Paramount, but I can't imagine that this will be the cure for what ails Warner Brothers or Paramount or movies in general. Frankly, I hope that Warner Brothers remains independent.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm currently reading Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, and he's all for the competitive marketplace, and I think that goes for movies as well, that the more people we have trying to make good movies that make money, the more likely we are that they succeed in that, that they make a movie that is good and worth seeing. And I'd be kind of surprised if Warner Brothers would get sold, because, I mean, they've just been on a crazy run this year. They have been doing so incredibly well that I feel like it's got to have jacked their price up or made it that they don't want to sell or something. You'd think that doing well would have a positive influence on the business as a whole, but I guess maybe I don't know enough about movie business that sometimes you do well and it doesn't mean anything.
I don't know, man. It seems to me like if we're gonna to use an Adam Smith metaphor, I think maybe when it comes to movies, and honestly, the world in general, right now, the invisible hand of the market has severe carpal tunnel syndrome.
Well, I mean, there's other... we're not here to talk about The Wealth of Nations, but if you want to talk about it after the podcast, I do think some of his points about, like, here's not what not to do, I think are really interesting in light of the current economic situation in the world, where I'm like, he might have been right about that. He might have been on the money with that thing.
On the money.
Yeah.
On the not that this has anything to do with the listeners, but no thanks. I've read The Wealth of Nations. I'm not really interested in talking about
it. Have you really read it?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm having the toughest time getting through it. It's taking me like 2 months.
I'm in the middle of reading, speaking of things that have nothing to do, that will be of no interest to the listeners. I've been reading Shakespeare lately, and I'm finding it just a breeze. And I'm not saying that to show off or anything. I just think that having spent 4 years in college reading literature of a certain age and a certain style.
Yeah.
I do think that reading is a skill that is entirely distinct, or very much distinct, from literacy.
Yeah.
And sometimes there is a certain level of you have to train yourself to be able to read things from different periods.
Well, I'm sure me reading almost exclusively Discworld novels for the last, like, year has really teed me up well to read this 1700s piece of economic theory.
Probably.
Anyway, we're talking about movies on this podcast, Elliot.
So talk about movies. I don't know.
Yeah, you mentioned right before we started recording that you and our other brother are going to Frankenstein. There's some other new exciting movies coming out. I'm pretty sure Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie comes out this weekend. Come on now, Elliot. But yeah, we're getting into the thick of it. So I'm very excited moving into this. Elliot, you're seeing Frankenstein. I'm assuming by your dismissal, you're not going to see Bugonia?
No, I'm not going to see that nonsense.
It's going to be good, though.
Maybe. Actually, it's not.
It could be good.
I might see The Black Phone, too, because I watched The Black Phone
interesting.
Over our little break. I actually thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke?
Yeah, it's true. Ethan Hawke, bit of a crazy year for him, because he's also in Blue Moon, which I think is supposed to come out sometime soon.
Well, one more pitch for our listeners. If you are able, I and Nathan and I, would both heartily recommend that you find a way to watch Kathryn Bigelow's A House of Dynamite. We both watched it at the theater over our little break. Sorry for the break, by the way. That was Nathan's fault. He just doesn't care. He just doesn't really care about this program or our listeners. Wow. So, yeah, but Bigelow is back. Was she ever gone? I don't know. There are some people who don't like Detroit. I do not count myself among that number, but she's definitely back after a bit of a hiatus, and she is in tip-top form, in my opinion. I thought that this was an excellent movie, and yeah, absolutely worth seeing.
I 100% agree. I will, because this podcast mostly serves as a way for me to get issues I have with society out. I can't stand how many people dismiss the movie by comparing it to The Office. Because the...
Huh?
Well, so many of the reviews I see on, like, Letterboxd that are dismissive, they're like, oh, the movie sucks. Also, it looks like it's shot like The Office. Look, it's not an own of the movie to admit that you've never watched any movies using a documentary style besides...
Oh my gosh.
Besides The Office. That's not an own. That's like saying, you know, that's like revealing in your review of a science fiction movie that you've never seen 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's like, okay, thank you for invalidating your opinion. Not that your opinion's invalid, it's just, you know, I think sometimes we need to know how many grains of salt to take with a certain person's opinion if they're trying to speak as an expert on a situation or a topic. And if you're admitting that you don't have that expertise, that you haven't seen some of these other things, I don't, you know, I just think it really irritates me, because this, I see the same thing under all of her movies where they're like, oh, it's shot like The Office. Just watch another movie, please.
Wow. That was way more belligerent than I was expecting.
I'm just...
I agree, though. I would not take seriously anything that comes out of Letterboxd, for pity's sake. But yeah, it's not even like... This is not even nearly the most shaky cam we've ever gotten from Bigelow. And I just don't see how it matters. That's now I'm starting to get myself angry here. I'm not even gonna say what I was gonna say.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what you were gonna say, but I'm sure I'd agree with it. Anyway, let's pivot to talking about the subject of this episode. We've had 2 weeks, which is kind of convenient because it's brought us even closer to the synergy that I'm attempting to get with this movie pick, that we are doing the 1939 classic, The Wizard of Oz, which has been in the news since its release. It's a very, very lauded movie, very celebrated for most intents and purposes, the first large-scale movie to have color in the visuals, which is kind of a big deal. But it's also been in the news recently because of this adaptation of the stage musical Wicked that came out last year. The first part did huge acclaim, lots of nominations, lots of annoying marketing things, and now the second part is coming out very soon. And so I thought, why not? Because I didn't want to make you watch Wicked, because I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I thought, let's watch the original, the classic.
Wow, Nathan, are you feeling okay? You're just so aggressive.
I think I've been aggressive historically towards Wicked. I don't think it's a very good movie. I don't think it deserves all of the notes it's getting. Anyway, we're talking about The Wizard of Oz instead. So, Elliot, take me through this. I don't know if you have. Have you watched this movie before now that you watching it for this episode? And, you know, what are your opening thoughts? Let's get this started.
No, I've never seen this movie before. I've never seen it before recently. I watched Sam Raimi's Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah.
How about that? That's a good movie.
Thinking Man's Wicked.
Exactly. Yes. With James Franco.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong.
I can't remember who else was in that.
Mila Kunis played...
Yes.
The Wicked Witch, or the person who would become the Wicked Witch.
Yes.
That's literally the only thing I can remember about that movie is her crying and the tears because they're water hurting her.
Burning her?
Yeah, and thinking that was a clever idea. That's the only thing I can remember from that movie. Obviously I've heard about this movie. It is a certified MGM classic, literally.
Mm. Yeah.
There's really no need for preamble here, nor could any preamble soften what I'm about to say.
Oh, no.
I struggled with this movie. I don't think it's bad. It's hard to even... I couldn't even say that it's bad, because this movie is so... primordially simple, like, to the point that if I had to classify this movie's target demographic, I would say this movie is aimed at very young children. Like, wow. Children watching Paw Patrol are the kinds of people. And that's, I'm not even trying to insult it, although if that's not their aim, then I think that the creators took a fairly dim view of their audience. Wow. Because the plot is paper thin. The characters are zero dimensional. To the extent that the plot exists, it is just narrative set dressing to shunt the characters in between these attention-grabbing musical numbers and set pieces and the kind of stuff that you need in order to maintain the attention of an extremely young child. Because there is nothing else happening in between those musical, the songs, or just the nice shots of poppies and actors getting doused in asbestos. That was interesting.
Allegedly asbestos.
Oh, shut up. I can't say that this movie is bad, because if that's what they were trying to do, and I do believe that's what they were trying to do, that they were aiming for they were not aiming very high, which we can have a discussion about whether that's good or not. But in my opinion, I don't think that this movie is bad. I think that it is just very, very much not for me in a lot of different ways.
Interesting. It's... I don't think what you're saying is incorrect. I will say, who's being belligerent now? I mean, good grief. So harsh. But I do think The Wizard of Oz is kind of always mentioned, or at least in my mind, is always kind of connected with the other huge movie of 1939, which would be Gone with the Wind. That these are kind of... These are kind of two sides of the coin for old Hollywood. Again, in my, you know, I'm not like an old Hollywood expert, but Gone with the Wind represents, right, the Cleopatras or Ben-Hur or the Ten Commandments, right? Just huge, sweeping stories, epic tales that span, right, typically a long period of time. They use huge numbers of extras and giant sets, and right, they're colored in beautiful VistaVision or whatever, Technicolor. And then The Wizard of Oz is kind of the flip side of that, where it is, right, there is a lot of money going into this. Like, there's a lot of sets, there is a decent number of extras. Obviously, the whole sequence in Munchkinland has a lot of extras and is a fairly resource heavy sequence, but in terms of storytelling and in terms of the tone of the story, I would agree with you. It is definitely a little more aimed at a younger audience. And I guess I would diverge from you in that I don't think that's entirely a bad thing. I think Wizard of Oz is kind of a very simple story. I think it's kind of benefits from the simplicity of its story, that it's easy to get pulled in the same way that, yeah, a child is instantly rooting, right, for the beautiful young girl who's being harassed by an evil-looking witch. Even an adult, right, instantly is invested in the story and cares about the story, and especially if the evil witch is trying to kill a dog, what a terrible thing to try to do. Especially with when it's such a tiny, insignificant dog as Toto. Like, it's not a Doberman or anything. What can it do? So I think I'm a little higher on the movie, which is also partially why I picked it, is I do think Wizard of Oz is kind of a classic, old Hollywood, fun, little, jaunty story that has fun technical elements and is also a neat historical artifact that, like I said, it was for a lot of people the first time they ever saw a movie in color, which just, I can't even imagine what the experience of seeing Dorothy walk into Oz must have been like. If you had never seen a movie in color before and you didn't know it was coming, that would be insane. So I think it is simple, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
It's your show, dude. What are you?
Well, I think the one thing that I do think is a bad thing, and we can maybe start with, is this is a musical. And outside of one song that I think is okay, a lot of these songs are not great. Or at least don't do very much for me and don't get me excited for them to appear. I can't imagine that you feel differently, but I'm going to flip this over to you. What did you think of the songs and this as a musical?
Well, they all sound very similar. Like, I'm sitting here struggling to think of, to remember, like, the rhythm or the melody or... Right, the structure of any of these songs. I don't really have anything else. I struggle to think of what to say. I just thought that they were so forgettable. Like, literally, I've forgotten them. I can't remember them. I can't remember how any of them go. I think that the song that Scarecrow and the Tin Man and Lion all sing after they've been recruited, I'm pretty sure that's like the exact, that is just the same song every time, or it's a very similar song every time. But that is part of what for me made that section really drag, is because we were just spinning our wheels, accumulating characters and a formula rapidly emerged in that they would stumble across them, they would identify what they're missing, propose that the wizard could provide it for them, and then they would do a song which sounds a lot like the song immediately before and after it. And yeah, that applies to all of the songs. I'm pulling a total blank trying to think of any of the songs, a single lyric.
Well, the one song that I think is pretty decent is Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the very first song in the movie, which presumably you can remember at the very least the first line of it, right?
Well, yeah, I remember that, but I don't care about it.
Well, I think that one's decent and certainly brings my hopes up for the rest of the movie, but yeah, I agree with you. Once it's just each member of the crew singing about needing a brain or needing a heart or needing courage, I really don't like the lion at all. I like the Scarecrow's okay, the Tin Man's all right, the lion irritates me. And he's not helped by the fact that he gets two songs, because he sings this song about being the king of the jungle.
Yeah.
That, to me, destroys the pacing of the movie. Like, up to now, it's not, like, incredibly paced, but it follows a understandable formula, right? They meet a person, they sing a song, like you mentioned. But then they randomly sing a song before going to see the wizard, and it just, it's, for me, it's such a bizarre choice. It's a terrible, it's not a very good song, and it just really kills a lot of my excitement, but it feels like the story just grinds to a halt at that point. And then, yeah, I don't think there's any other songs. Maybe, does she sing a song when she's trapped in the castle?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I can't remember.
She just argues with the witch.
She does. And I do think it's crazy that the witch just, like, why doesn't the witch just kill her and take her shoes? Why does she do this?
Well, she can't, right? The shoes provide her some level of
protection.
Magical protection. That was my understanding.
Yeah, but then she like flips over the timer and she's like, once the time's up, you'll be dead. Or something like that.
Oh, well, heck, I don't know.
This is why we need Wicked and Oz the Great and Powerful. We need to explain these questions. Explain the answers.
Yeah, the Wikipedia plot summary says that during their quest, Dorothy and Toto are captured by flying monkeys and taken to the Wicked Witch's castle, but the ruby slippers protect her, and Toto manages to escape. So, maybe the witch was bluffing, and she was hoping that Dorothy would
take him off.
Yeah, take him off. Yeah, and be like, oh, okay, fine, you win.
It's not a bad strategy, honestly.
Well, can I say, the witch was so annoying to me.
Oh, interesting.
She was so, like, she just showed up occasionally to screech at the characters, and her voice was annoying, and the characters were terrified of her, but she hadn't done anything. She didn't look scary at all. There was a total disconnect between how the characters felt about her and how she had been portrayed up until that point, or throughout the movie, where she had done nothing very intimidating. I mean, she hadn't done anything intimidating, and she would just, like, pop in occasionally to remind the audience, yeah, I'm here. And, yeah.
That's interesting, because usually when I see lists of like the greatest movie villains of all time, usually the Wicked Witch gets pretty high on those lists.
Well, usually those lists are written by, right, 100-year-olds who were children when this movie came out and were really frightened by it.
They'd have to be 100 years old in order to be children. The movie came out a long time ago, Elliot.
That's why I said 100-year... Nathan!
Well, I thought you might have been being exaggerating a little bit. But no, I sort of agree. I don't think the Wicked Witch is, like, an incredible villain. I think a big reason why she seems intimidating, and again, this is maybe my biggest sticking point with this movie. It seems really clear to me that this whole thing can very easily be interpreted as just a dream that Dorothy is having, right? All of the people in Oz are played by the same actors as people from Dorothy's real life, and all of their roles follow similar sorts of roles to their role outside in the real world. So I don't this is my biggest thing with Wicked, is I'm like, if the Wizard of Oz is just Dorothy having a dream, why on earth do I care about Wicked, which is making up some stuff about some stuff that's made up, which, you know, maybe that's all a fiction, is just we're making up some nonsense about some nonsense. But it just feels like too many layers, levels of things happening. But anyway, I think the witch is decent in that sort of sense, right? That she represents this evil woman that Dorothy knows outside, in the real world, outside of Oz. And so she doesn't really have to do anything to be all that intimidating, because Dorothy's supposed to be like 15 or 16 or something like that. So, you know, everyone's fairly intimidating when you're like a 16-year-old girl, especially when they show up trying to steal your dog and kill it.
Well, that's great, Nathan. But that has nothing to do with what's actually happening within the fiction of the movie.
You're so literal.
If I was a 15-year-old, I would not be intimidated by this witch.
You'd just beat up the witch the first time she showed up? Suplex her?
Maybe. I mean, she's vastly outnumbered when she first shows up.
It's true. It is kind of, it's kind of crazy, because the Munchkins act like they had just been freed from a tyrannical leader, but it didn't seem as though the Wicked Witch of the East had any further influence. Like, she didn't have a bunch of guards or a standing army that was controlling the Munchkins. Probably she was just able to control the Munchkins because they were spending all their time working on this big musical number that they were going to do whenever someone showed up and killed the witch.
Could be.
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. That's a fairly famous song, Elliot.
Yeah, whatever. So I'm guessing there's a good witch of the South?
I have no idea.
The East and West are bad and North and South are good?
I think so. I want to say in the book that the movie is based on, there is a good witch of the South and there's something with her. And I think the movie just kind of combined both of the roles into Glinda, because it was easier to just have one person or something like that. But I don't know. I haven't read the book. I think the book was assigned reading for me at one point, but I didn't. I chose to not read it. So, hello?
What?
Are you doing something else?
No, I'm struggling here, man. This movie is so simple. Like, there's just nothing to say about it.
Well, then let's compare this to other, because I think part of the charm of the movie for me is that it is, like you said, kind of a very simple children's story. But it's made with a lot of things that I find fun in these old movies, right? Like, most of the film takes place on a set, and it's pretty obviously a set, which is always something that I think is really fun. I love sets. I think they're neat. And I like seeing, you know, I said at the beginning that it's not an epic in the same way as Gone with the Wind, but I do think it's a movie where there a lot of money went into this, right? Like, the sequence in Munchkin Land is very extensive. All of the sets, the costumes of all of the different characters, especially, right, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion, who I didn't even realize until I was watching Wicked that, like, oh, the lion was, like, supposed to be a real lion that could talk. I don't know why that was never clear to me, but because everything I've ever seen is just a guy in a lion suit, I was like, yeah, it's just some crazy guy in a lion suit. I don't know. That's what it's supposed to be, I guess. I didn't realize until I saw Wicked, like, oh, it's an animal, of course. Why would it not be? But I think that's part of the draw of it, is that it's a very simple story. And I found myself, honestly, on this watch, I found it to be a reasonably compelling story about Dorothy trying to get her way home, especially those two scenes where she's, the first scene with the wizard in the real world, where he kind of convinces her to go back home because Aunt Em is concerned for her, or he claims that he can see that she is concerned and is sick with worry over it. And then the scene in the Wicked Witch's castle where she was like, oh, I just want to get home, I think is kind of, it again, it's not complex, but it's something that is compelling for me, and I think drives my enjoyment of the movie, where it's a really simple plot. It's just someone trying to get back home, but outside of that one thing I already mentioned where the song lasts forever, it feels like a fairly breezy, enjoyable experience in that, you know, sort of vein.
I don't know. The thing that precipitates her leaving home in the first place doesn't have that much to do with home itself. It's more to do with things that are external to home, specifically this woman and her designs on Toto. I feel like I would be more on board if, like, she has a disagreement with her aunt and uncle about them not protecting Toto, but, like, I mean, I love dogs, but also, if she has the power of the law behind her, I'm at a loss as to what they're supposed to do. I feel like it would make more sense if she had, like, an actual falling out with them, or didn't feel like she was at home, and that was communicated in some way, or just it having more to do with her family and her house and her surroundings and stuff. Something that I thought a lot about while I was watching this movie was The Phantom Tollbooth. Remember that book?
Yes.
This movie reminded me a lot of The Phantom Tollbooth, which, if you didn't know, is a book about... And they did make a movie about it with Mel Blanc playing a lot of the funny characters.
Interesting.
It's a book about a child who's indifferent about things. He doesn't care about things, not interested in anything. And he's transported to this magical world, and there's all kinds of goofy characters and funny rules, and it's all based around, like, wordplay, and I'm describing this very poorly. It's a good book. You should read it.
No, it is a fun book, yeah.
The point is that Milo... The reason Milo needs to go on this journey is because of his indifference to life and what it has to offer to him. It's very directly linked to the lesson he will end up learning. I didn't get that sense from this movie. Like, Dorothy's lesson of, summed up in "there's no place like home," That I didn't get the sense that that was something that Dorothy had forgotten or hadn't learned yet and needed to remember or learn. Like, she ran away because of her dog. She didn't want her dog to die, not because she didn't value home and family enough.
Yeah, I can kind of see where you're saying that. I think there is some sense that she doesn't really value home. Certainly in the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow, right? She's clearly yearning to be someplace other than home. But I would agree that's kind of a thin explanation. And the most obvious explanation for why she leaves home is, yeah, obviously, she thinks her dog is going to get killed. And so it's not, like you said, that she's not
also valuing. That problem's not solved when she gets back.
Well, when that woman comes back, they're going to murder her and feed her to the pigs.
Oh, of course.
They're going to throw water on her and kill her. That's what she learned from Oz.
See, that would be funny.
How to murder.
I mean, Oz, I know I'm interrupting here, but Oz, the Wizard of Oz, gives the task he gives them is like, hey, go assassinate my political rival, and then I'll do what you want me to do, which I thought was crazy.
It is weird, because in the real world, he's just kind of a con man grifter sort of thing, which is kind of what he is in Oz as well. But yeah, it is kind of crazy that he basically tells them to go on a suicide mission, and when they come back, he's like, oh, I never expected you to come back. I mean, that's crazy. Maybe the wizard is a bad guy. I'm watching this Wicked movie, and I'm thinking this wizard guy doesn't seem like all that in a bag of chips. He seems like he has something else up his sleeve, unlike in that great Sam Raimi movie, where he's just a good guy.
He's a hero.
He is a hero. That movie's about him learning to be a hero.
I think it is, actually.
Yeah, I know it is. I wasn't joking there. That is what the movie's about. But yeah, I guess I would agree. If you think about other children's movies that revolve around a very simple sort of hero's journey like this, it is odd that Dorothy doesn't really have a character arc, or at least doesn't have that inciting incident where they're deficient in something that they then have to learn over the course of the journey, in the way that, like, Marlin in Finding Nemo and kind of Nemo in Finding Nemo, but like both of them have to learn something over the course of the film that they don't know at the beginning or aren't properly practicing at the beginning. Yeah. Is a fair point, I would say. But I would say, I guess moving to maybe some technical aspects, which I already talked about. I love the sets. I like the costumes. I think it's all very neat. What did you think of those parts of the movie?
I mean, it's fine. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks good. And I should say, I didn't hate watching this movie. Like, it did appeal to a certain I don't know how to say this. I'm not immune to the charms of simplicity. And if I sat down and watched an episode of Paw Patrol, okay, actually no, I would hate that. I'm just saying, it's simple, but it could have been worse. That seems like damning with faint praise, but it's not unenjoyable to watch, because I like, gosh dang, man, this is so hard. I like the pretty colors are pretty, and the costumes and the characters are funny looking. And that activated like some base level neurons for me. And so I, throughout the whole movie, I was just vaguely entertained on a certain level. But yeah, I mean, the costumes are fine. The costume, Dorothy's costume, is not convincing me that, I just completely blanked on her name.
Judy Garland.
Yes, it is not convincing me that Judy Garland is 15 years old.
She was only like 17, so it's not, that means it's like actively convincing you she's older if it's not convincing you. I'm pretty sure she was
20, actually.
Really?
Something like that. I don't know.
She was way younger.
This movie came out in 1939.
Nope.
She was born in 1922, so she would have been 17.
I knew it. Gosh, you gotta stop doubting my movie knowledge, Elliot.
I guess I thought that she was supposed to be younger than that. I thought she was supposed to be, like, a child, not a teenager. She doesn't act like a teenager whatsoever.
I don't know. I'd have to...
Maybe teenagers were a lot more innocent and childlike in the 30s.
In the 30s? Or 20s.
I don't know, Nathan. I'm trying to be devil's advocate here. I'm just saying, she did not act like any teenager I have ever known.
It's because we've lost innocence, Elliot. We used to be innocent well into our 30s. It was a simpler time in 1939.
Maybe the dawn of World War II. It was just a better time. And it was a time when people looked on the bright side of things and they stayed young for longer.
Yeah. That sounds right to me. But I don't really have a ton else to say, I guess. I'm going to have one question for you, but I don't want to spoil my recommendation, so I'm going to have to ask it after the recommendation.
I mean, what else is there to say? This movie is, what, like, it's like an hour and 20 minutes?
Yeah, about. Why do you keep closing the tab to just reopen it?
It's an hour and 42 minutes. Holy cow, that's longer than I thought. It's an hour and 42 minutes of songs and not much else. Songs and songs and traveling. I don't know. Dancing. Yes. Dancing. Speeches, right? Yeah. There's plenty of speeches.
Yeah.
And the songs are forgettable, and the dancing is dancing, and the speeches are communicating fairly broad, sentimental platitudes. So, I mean, what is there to say?
Well, and maybe this is also an instance of, I'm trying to think of other movies similar to this. And I think this might be an instance of, you know, you gotta watch more really bad movies from this era to then have a higher opinion of Wizard of Oz. Because, like, if you've seen The Great Ziegfeld, or not Gigi, because I'm kind of a Gigi guy, TBH. It's a better movie than people give it credit for. An American in Paris. Like, if you see the other whimsical song and dance movies from this time, this is, in my opinion, on the higher end of the spectrum. There are so many of them with way worse songs, with zero, like, notable songs or songs that are even remotely enjoyable, with no fun sets, no good costumes, no, like, it's even worse and more simple storytelling. So for me, I think when I saw Wizard of Oz, I was like, oh, this is really good for its time. And I don't think it's necessarily aged phenomenally. in the same way that, I mean, every Billy Wilder movie has, or, you know, something like Lawrence of Arabia is not that old. Ben-Hur, which has aged pretty decently. So, what I'm saying is, Elliot, my next 10 choices for the podcast are all going to be 40s, terrible 40s movies. So then you can come back and regrade Wizard of Oz based on those movies.
It's not going to change a thing.
Dang it.
I can guarantee you. Good in comparison is just not, is just not points that I give. Mm.
All right. Well, let's give some points then. I can go first. I think this is a pretty good movie. I agree with some of the points that Elliot is making. I do think that, you know, I think this is also just a difference for us, is that movies have to do things to, I think for me, movies have to do something to lose points, and for you, movies have to do something to gain points. Is maybe,
that is
like,
so true.
Like, this movie doesn't do a lot that makes it lose points for me. And so by the end of it, I'm like, oh, that was pretty enjoyable. But I also would agree, it doesn't do a ton of stuff where I'm like, this is amazing. So for that, I'm going to give it like a 6.8 out of 10. I think it's a pretty decent movie. I think you can do a lot worse than this if you're having to watch old movies.
Yeah. There's worse ways to kill time, but there's also better ways to kill time. C-.
Wow. All right, well then, my recommendation, and this was the movie that as soon as I started watching Wizard of Oz for the podcast, I thought of this movie because I had just recently watched it.
I have a bad feeling we're going to be recommending the same thing.
Oh no, is it Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
No, okay.
Oh, yes. Well, mine is the Gene Wilder version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I watched it very recently, and I think it's a very similar movie. Its charm is similar, right? We've got songs and dances, we've got elaborate sets, we've got very colorful sets, we've got a very whimsical story that is ostensibly a children's story. And I think this version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is pretty good. I think the songs are pretty good. They're not amazing, which again is kind of true of Wizard of Oz as well, but Gene Wilder is fantastic as Willy Wonka. The sets are fantastic, and the section at the beginning of this movie where they're showing the like world trying to find the golden tickets is just such a fantastic sequence. I remember reading this book as a kid and just thinking, this whole search for golden tickets to go into a mythical chocolate factory was so whimsical and fun. And I was just like, man, you know, it's like the memes where people are like, boy, this movie is fun. Man, I wish Ohio was real. Or man, I wish, you know, blank was real. That was me reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I was like, man, I wish chocolate factories were real, or at least had real human slavery running them, or whatever it is that Willy Wonka is doing with the Oompa Loompas.
It is Roald Dahl.
But it's a really fun movie, and I think if you liked The Wizard of Oz, chances are you're also going to really like this Willy Wonka. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is this one. The other one is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right? Or am I getting these confused? One of the adaptations is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and one is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
And the Charlie Factory.
Let me fact check while you...
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Oh, Ellie, it's fact checking.
No, it is the Gene Wilder one is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
That's what I thought. Weird.
The other one, the Tim Burton one, that's the one that I've seen. That one's called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, you haven't seen this version? Well, I was going to ask you what you think of this version, because I do feel like it's a very similarly, like, kind of simplistic story, and also very similar in the sense that Charlie is not really deficient in anything at the beginning of the movie, except for, like, he's very
materially
poor. he's destitute, but he's not like a bad person, which is I guess kind of the point of the movie, is that he's not a greedy, slimy kid like these other scumbags.
Yeah, they deserve what they got.
None of them die.
I know. Why did you say that?
Well, I'm just saying, you make it sound like he killed them.
No, they deserve the lesson. My goodness, Nathan, you're really crimping my style today.
All right, anyway, what's your recommendation here?
My recommendation is going to be A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Because
This was the movie that I was thinking, I was thinking about The Phantom Tollbooth and A Muppet Christmas Carol the whole time I was watching this. Because A Muppet Christmas Carol, again, it's very simple. It's whimsical. It's kind of, its main strength is, or at least for children, its main strength would be the breakneck pace and the constant things to look at and just the whimsy and all of it. The difference being that A Muppet Christmas Carol is also enjoyable for me as an angry, disaffected old man. We did a review for this,
yeah,
and we both loved it. This movie is so charming, and Scrooge has a simple but very affecting character arc, and the songs are great, and the puppets are fantastic. The death puppet, the thing is sick, and the Santa Claus puppet, the really big one, that's awesome. I don't know how you could fail to be charmed by A Muppet Christmas Carol, so... If you're into this kind of thing and you haven't seen A Muppet Christmas Carol, get it done, dude, and then make it part of your yearly rotation.
Wow. I agree. That's a very charming, whimsical, classic children's movie. We should do like a children's movie tier list sometime, Elliot.
Yeah, I think Into the Spider-Verse would probably top my list. But... You know what they say? By they, I mean me. Life is hard and full of disappointments.
Of course. Yes. This is always where I tell people to send us an email. You know, are you beyond offended by our opinion on The Wizard of Oz? It's decently possible. I know a lot of people who really love this movie. But, yeah, send us an email. Let us know if you have a request. Send us those. We love fulfilling requests and watching movies that you guys love that we inevitably don't love. And so we have to criticize. But thank you so much for listening. We apologize, yeah, for the break. I was on vacation and we couldn't really find a way to work in a recording session before I had to leave. But... we're going to be back next week for sure. We're going to be talking about the movies we saw over the weekend, if we see any. And we'll be talking about a new movie. So look forward to that and have a great week in between.